Welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Well, you're a good thing. People enjoyed what you had to say, and they understood what you're talking about. And one of the big questions that's coming up again and again is from parents, and of course teachers trying to explain to parents this whole business of Common Core. Can you give us a definition of it and why parents should be concerned about it?
Well, I'm hearing a lot from parents saying they're concerned about government overreach. Traditionally, education has been a state responsibility and, most importantly, a local and community-based decision. So it feels like the government's trying to come in and tell us what to teach. Mm-hmm. But what really is great about Common Core is it's telling you how to teach. They've done all this research and have these great best strategies, research-based strategies. So they're not telling you what to teach, the content, but they're telling you, hey, we want you to teach it in this format. This is the vehicle we'd like you to take. So most of it is rigorous and great teaching practices. I still think they need to work out some of the bugs because I've seen some of the questions, especially in math, and they seem very disorganized. But I think as we go through this, we're going to fix the bugs and make it a great tool. So it's just the federal government is trying to raise the standards nationally. So even if your child is learning about their state history in their specific state, if they transferred and moved to another state, they're still going to receive that rigorous technique,
right,
but different content.
So you're saying that they're really trying to standardize what we teach across this nation. That's basic.
Right. The expectations of a child being able to use text-based evidence to support their opinions or publish using technology should be the same for a fifth grader, no matter what state you're in.
You know, we just heard last week that the state of Louisiana is suing the federal government on this very issue that the federal government is stepping in to places that they have no right to be, that they're taking over the state's rights. You obviously don't think that's what's happening here.
You know what? As long as they're not telling us what content, I think that telling us how to teach it using these great strategies, I think each state should have their own wiggle room, you know, to personalize it for their mm-hmm. students, their teachers, and meet their needs. Because even from state to state, classroom to classroom, different kids who have different needs, and the state is trying to do what's best for their students. I also think the states are pushing back because they're not getting a whole lot of financial help. So if the government wants you to use these Common Core state standards, are they going to be providing funding, you know, for new textbooks?
Sure, sure.
Funding for teacher professional development.
You know, we're talking with educational expert Kim Mogileski. She knows what she's talking about when it comes to this business of teaching. So I guess the question then becomes for parents listening right now, Kim, to you, what role should you suggest the parent plays in making sure that this happens and it happens the way it should?
A lot of times at the beginning of the year, the parents are going to be receiving notification from the school or the teacher directly for open house or meet and greet. I would encourage parents to take the time. I know you guys are super busy and have a lot going on. Most of these take place 6-7 o'clock at night. Take the time and go in this year. If you haven't been in the past, it's okay. Go in. The teachers are going to talk to you about the standards. That means what skills and subject areas they're going to be covering. And then they're going to be talking about Common Core if they are a Common Core state.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone is. And they're going to explain to the parents how their school is handling it, what their child can expect in the classroom this year. So that would be my first step. Go to the open house, go to the meet and greet, and get the information directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
So I guess you'd say it's a blessing that the parents here are so concerned about the Common Core. In Thailand, for instance, while education's very big in Bangkok, out in the country where I was, you could change the curriculum completely and start teaching, you know, magic tricks or something. and you probably wouldn't hear much from a lot of the parents with their level of engagement there. It's just a very laid-back culture in certain places.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's sort of a blessing in disguise, all the uproar about the Common Core. It says parents care about what their students are learning.
Yeah, I think so. I think to get the parents in the door and into the classrooms and talking with their administrators and the teachers and find out what's really going on is always a good thing. A great teacher will welcome parents into his or her classroom. So those fabulous teachers are like, bring it. Just come on into the classroom. Let me show you what we're doing. So if it gets parents interested in education and participating in what their kid is doing in the classroom from day to day, I think it's an awesome thing.
We're listening to educational expert Kim Ogilesky. When we come back, we're going to talk about technology in today's classroom and some other stuff that you should know about, especially if you are a parent of a child attending our public school system. The analogy that you use, Kim, as to what Common Core, how it should be perceived. Say that again for me, would you please?
Sure. Think of an 18-wheeler. The stuff that the 18-wheeler is hauling in those big container boxes, that is the content, what kids need to know at each grade level. So what are they going to learn in fourth grade? What are they going to learn in second grade? What are they going to learn in eighth grade is in that box. The 18-wheeler is the delivery method. That's Common Core. So think of Common Core as an 18-wheeler that's hauling your state standards and skills that children are expected to learn each year in their school.
And that, and then, as you point out, the standardization means that they're learning it from Florida to Seattle, I mean across
right.
country.
Standardization just means they're all receiving these high-quality, research-based strategies. So the way the teacher is giving the information or presenting the lessons to the kids will have some uniformity across the United States.
And let me say something, and Kim, and you can react to how the teacher is going to react. Folks, this is your public school system. They're teaching your children. I love it when parents, and I don't love it, I mean, I think it's ridiculous, when you hang out and act like, oh, well, I'll drop them at the school door and then they're on their own or whatever. You have as a right, Kim, parents have a right to walk in and say, what are you doing? And how are you doing it? Isn't that true?
Absolutely. Now, because we have, you know, some safety protocols, the parents can actually walk into the classroom. However, they should be able to make an appointment and get a response within 24 hours from the school or the teacher, his or herself. And the parents should be allowed to come into the classroom and see what's going on. If you see worksheet after worksheet after worksheet coming home and there's not a whole lot of creativity, that should raise a red flag. You want to get in there and find out what exactly is going on. Let's see what you're teaching and how you're teaching it. And this is for any age level, any grade level. A great teacher is going to want the parents to be involved. Remember, teachers perceive the parents as their child's first teacher. So you're working with a colleague, a collaborator, if you will. So when you have someone who's interested in what their child is doing in the classroom and concerned about what's being taught, that's a good thing. We want parents to be there. Think of it as a triangle because it's a partnership between the teacher, the parent, and the child.
Very important, folks, that you think about that. And also think about the technology. Let me just give you an example of where I am. I don't know how to do half the stuff my kid knows how to do with the tablets and the computers and all the stuff that they have. I just kind of hang out instead of making sure that I'm involved, even though the technology in today's classroom is new. It's important that the parent still play an active role at that point, isn't it?
Well, we've got the safety feature, of course. We want parents on the ball and having them know what apps or programs they're using. I think technology in the classroom is a great thing. I'm very excited about seeing all the new technology that's being pushed into the classroom. And here's the point that you need to know, and listeners, teachers, parents, people who care for children, yes, they're awesome with technology. You hand them a smartphone or a tablet and they're 18 months old and they can do it better than you. However, they don't know how to leverage the technology to produce or find good information. Mm-hmm. So the teacher is the guide on the side. The parents are the guide on the side. You're showing them how to leverage technology in meaningful ways. So I can give you some examples
please,
if you'd like.
Please.
When you're doing a research project, let's say, for example, you're teaching your students about Rosa Parks and you're examining a primary source photo, a photo from the civil rights movement where Rosa Parks was, you know, very involved at that point. Mm-hmm. And you're having this lesson. You tell the kids, okay, I need you to do a biography or some sort of report about Rosa Parks. And you tell them you're going to use the computer. So a lot of times you'd say, okay, the lesson is done there. We just turn them loose and they Google or do web search for Rosa Parks. Here's where the teacher and the parent needs to come in. There's so much information out there, it's hard to sift through all of that information and find out what's good, what's real, what's productive information. When you get on there and you type in Rosa Parks, if you're looking for a biography and ads are popping up, yep, it'll have a little yellow box around it. It will say AD. That's an ad. It's like a commercial. So I'm training teachers and parents to use modifiers. Now, I'm not a paid employee of Google Chrome,
right.
It really is a fantastic tool and comes with a ton of applications. So I'm going to recommend that if you type in Rosa Parks, use a modifier. What's a modifier? It's going to filter some of the information on there so that you have a more productive search. For example, type in Rosa Parks space colon edu. What the computer is going to do is pull up all the educational websites that feature Rosa Parks. Now, do you think that you're going to have more good information, factual information from educational websites rather than a .com?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would
so
you?
Probably.
Probably so.
You can also do a modifier and do an org.
So that's
like a nonprofit business.
Right.
Will
so
come up.
The modifier is the EDU part, right? You've modified the search.
Right. So right, it's only going to pull up websites that have that EDU. So these are going to be school websites, college websites, university websites, educational publishers that work with schools. So you're probably going to find better information on those websites.
And teachers
can also ask them to put in gov, mm-hmm, colon G-O-V. It will only pull up government websites.
So you're saying we need to teach our children how to modify their searches to get good information versus bad information.
Right. And okay, it's not just like bad, awful information. You know, if you do a search and Wikipedia comes up, there's a lot of good information on there. However, you have to explain to students, this is crowdsourced information. Someone could have snuck something on there that hasn't been tagged yet as inappropriate content.
It's great. It's great information, Kim, and that's why we have you on here, because we need to know these things, and I thank you so much for sharing with us. We're going to be back with Kim. We're going to talk about what to expect this school year, what you should expect from your student and from your school. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, along with Tally Berry. We're talking with educational expert Kim Mogilevsky, a veteran teacher who's earned her National Board Certification and knows a thing or two about what you can expect in the classroom. Tally, you had a question.
Yeah, we know about the educational arms race, spending more money on SAT prep, spending more money on tutoring tools. Kim, do you have any advice for parents on how to spend money wisely to bolster your students' education but not break the bank?
Oh, definitely. First of all, when you're going back to school, regardless of what grade level your child is in, they most likely received a supply list. And the supply list can be intimidating, exhausting, and not to mention expensive. So what I recommend parents do is send the child to school the first week of school with the basics. If they're in elementary school, don't forget the markers and crayons, because that is a happy day maker or breaker if you don't have those things. But wait until you go to the open house or the meet and greet. It usually those are the second or third week that school has been in session, and you can find out from the teacher what he or she really needs. So a lot of times when I was in the classroom, we'd have to do a grade level supply list. Some teachers want more paper towels. Some teachers want more pencils. So instead of buying everything on that wish list, wait to talk to the teacher and find out what he or she really needs. They might not need another 10 boxes of Kleenex, but they might need another box of number 2 pencils.
The point well taken, Tally, because indeed, after a couple of weeks, the teacher knows where he or she is, and she'll also have a chance to kind of grade the children or have it evaluate. And so, Kim, at this point, the teacher can give you a more definitive need list or not by sharing with you where they think her class and your child is.
Right. You just ask the teacher, what do you need? I'm here to help you. What are you doing for me and my child? You're providing an awesome education for my child. You're impacting their future. If I can help you by spending $5 on an item that you really need, that's where I'd rather spend my $5.
So what you're really pointing to here is a quality level of education as opposed to a quantity level, meaning that if you get the things that are right for your child, that child is going to get a better education.
Absolutely. I don't need another box of tissues to do my job, but I do need those markers that you use on the board. So the dry erase markers are really important. So if you let the teacher tell you exactly what they need, or they might say, I don't need any more anything. Can I call you later on in the year with a request?
In terms of what to expect the school year, Kim, you know, education is such a huge issue. So, I mean, so multifaceted. I guess you talked about the triangle. So what does the student, the parent, and the teacher, what do we have a right to expect?
Well, I think that parents and teachers should communicate at least on a weekly basis. If your child is special needs or has something, a medical condition or something like that, it should be a daily need. As far as I'm concerned, I think that emailing is the easiest way, but parents should be checking their online. A lot of schools have online portals where the teachers have web pages and they can communicate on a daily basis and let you know. So the parents should be invited into the classroom virtually, at least on a daily or weekly basis. And the kids should be required to let the parents know, hey, there's something in my folder or my backpack you need to see. So there is a responsibility on the students. But I would encourage teachers to continue to reach out to parents. Teachers know that parents are working hard. We know that you have full-time jobs. Some of you have 2 and 3 jobs, plus you might have additional children at home. We know you're busy, but we care about your child, and we want you to communicate with us. So if you haven't touched base with your child's teacher at least once a month, try and make that a goal.
So important, as you said, the lines of communication. You can't just allow your responsibility to your child's education to end at the school doorstep. You've got to step across that line. And by the way, you make a very valid point. I've heard people say this, Bones. They've said, "Well, I don't use that high tech stuff. If I'm going to deal with my kid, I'm going into the classroom, and they're never going to get in there because they're busy." But you make the point that the technology is there, and use it to your success.
Right. Encourage parents to go online. Encourage teachers to communicate via email and posting things on their website. There's no hiding from technology. And you know your kids are going to be able to show you how to get onto the computer anyway, because the teacher's going to model this in the classroom. And here's one more reason you should go to that open house or meet and greet, because the teacher is going to show the parents how to access her. He is going to tell the parents, here's the best way to get a hold of me. This is how I prefer to communicate. Please let me know what's the best way to communicate with you.
Kim, thank you so much for being with us again. As always, we appreciate you. And come back and see us soon, would you please?
Absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you for being with us as well.